Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freund Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply. Nintendo!
Nintendo Voice Chat for the week of March 30th, 2017. I'm Jose Otero, and coming up on Nintendo Voice Chat, we've got the Splatoon Global Test Fire to talk about, we've got Snake Pass to talk about, some news, and joining me to talk about it this week, we have Zach Ryan.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah, Brian Altano.
What's up, what's up, what's up?
And we have Pierre Schneider.
Hello.
Now, before we begin, I just want to start out with a quick thank you to everyone who has been supporting the show and watching the show. March 2017 was actually the biggest month for NVC in the show's life.
No joke.
And we owe a lot of that to you. So thank you so much for watching, for listening, for checking us out. Like, we're very grateful for it.
It's crazy. It was such a slow news month.
Yeah, nothing happened.
Yeah, we need more consoles to get announced and maybe released.
Joke.
Maybe like a Zelda game or two would be
cool. That'd be good too. All right, so first up, let's talk about the Splatoon 2 Global Test Fire, which was this past weekend. Don't call it a beta, but you know, some news from the Inky Front. So I'm curious, out of all, like, who played? I played a ton.
You say some news from the Inky Front?
Yeah,
I caught that. That was good.
Yeah. What about you?
Did
you
get to try? I got through the tutorial, and then it could not connect to a single match.
Okay. What?
Yeah. And okay. Do you think it was like a firewall issue here, or
might have been you guys were hogging up all the internet here?
No, well, I played from home.
Yeah, I played here.
And everything worked for me. I had no disconnects.
Mm-hmm.
And we had three switches running in my house at the same time. We were all able to connect, always reconnected right away after a match. And then at the end of the test fire, I'm like, this is the last match. And my kids are like, nope, still going.
You got that?
And then they connected again, and they got another match.
Yeah, yeah.
Not
you got
cool.
That GM money router.
Not
I guess.
Cool. Like, I wasn't able Space to play anymore, stuff. But the kids were still.
Like crazy internet.
Yeah.
So I connected to a bunch of matches at the office. I used a wired connection first, but I did jump on and
so you docked
one
it and wired it, right?
Yeah, got docked it and wired it. Reminder, there's a USB Ethernet adapter you can buy for your Switch. If you have one for Wii U, use it. If you've had one from Wii, use that.
Yeah.
A couple of notes for me. First, the Splat Dualies are really fun. Like, this was my first time really like getting a chance to play around with them a lot more. And if you use the Splat Dualies, you got to use this new sort of deployable device called the Curling Bomb, which is basically this disc shape. It looks almost like, what's that little vacuum assistant people buy? Like
Roomba. Roomba.
Yeah, it looks like a Roomba.
It looks like a curling iron, yeah.
And you throw it. So how long you charge it up depends on its distance and how far it'll travel. So if you just tap the button, you'll fling it, and it will slide across the floor, and it will bounce off of walls.
And
so
it,
you
can strategically, and it explodes at the end, like
yeah,
small
it explodes
explosion
at the end,
of
like a grenade. Yeah. But it will slide around, and that's really helpful, because if an opponent is pretty far off, you can kind of cut him off and cut off his path a little bit as you try to sort
so,
of like get
What are the physics on it? Like, if you know somebody's coming around a corner, can you bounce it off
yes.
the wall?
Yes,
that's
absolutely.
Awesome.
Yeah,
so that's why it gets its name, right?
Sounds awesome.
Like, yeah. Sounds like curling to me. Like
yes, yes,
good
absolutely.
Players will be deadly with it.
Yeah,
that's
and
rad.
If you, and if you hold
I
the button, it's a short toss and then boom. And it will. There's still a pretty hefty like delay before it explodes, so you have some time to get away.
Okay,
But you'll hear it sort of count down and boom.
And of course, it leaves you vulnerable because you're almost out of ink when you shoot that thing.
Yeah,
right? Like so, you got to be in a safe spot, but you can also curl it off the ledge and stuff.
Yes,
right?
So absolutely. Yeah.
You can do some cool stuff with it. I really like that.
Another cool thing is just how the Splat Dualies work in terms of, and you've seen this before when they revealed the game, but you can sort of dodge roll and you'll bring together your two ink streams into one and just let off a pretty powerful attack. Granted, though, the tricky thing with it is that the way I play Splatoon, I'm very much used to jumping into squid form quickly or almost like hitting jump and squid form at the same time. And if you jump before you hit squid form, you'll roll. Mm-hmm. You won't turn into squid and then jump. So I got to kind of change my timing because I'm so used to playing a certain way.
So I'm sure everybody who played this, by the way, opened the map by accident multiple times when trying to jump.
They changed
right?
jump.
Like, they changed
yeah.
jump. And so like I hadn't played Splatoon for a while, but instantly I'm trying to jump. It's like map. Every time,
bummer.
Yeah, what you
yeah.
saying?
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Different
the
controls.
Same button placement as Zelda. Jump is the highest button.
The Y button.
Yeah, the Y button. Yes, yeah. Or the X actually.
From what
Y.
I played so far, right. And obviously we have barely seen any of it, and I just went through the tutorial. But like, it doesn't necessarily feel like this huge jump.
It doesn't feel like a sequel
on the Xbox.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's 100% fair.
I had a hard time telling the difference. Like, honestly, I mean, like. It looks the same, and I've seen it at an event with you before. I was
yeah,
like,
I played
is,
it with
is
you
that
there.
More jaggy looking? Mm-hmm. Like when we first saw it, I thought, I even thought it was a step down, but on my screen it looked really nice. Like it didn't mm-hmm. have a lot of jaggy issues, but you could have fooled me, man. If
really?
If I didn't know it was Splatoon 2 and you just saw somebody playing it,
looks
it
the same.
A new map. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And that's sure. definitely something in the feedback that I want to get to. But last positive thing I do want to throw out there is I played this over data tethering on another phone I have. So I have a Project Fi phone that I use every once in a while, especially for trips. Because
what is that?
Project
burn
Fi
it, don't worry
is,
about
a,
it.
Is a Google, is basically Google's answer to like a data plan, and it works internationally, which is great. So if you guys send me to
Japan,
do you
have a secret identity?
No, I just have the phone still, and I pay for it. So
sounds like a secret identity.
So I just
Double
decided
Otero.
To no. So I decided to. Well, I haven't used any data this month, and it rolls over. So I'm just going to tether the phone to it. And so where I live is horrible, by the way, for signal. Like it's just not good cell phone signal reception in general.
I was playing just fine. Matches from my room, which was surprising to me.
What the hell was my problem?
Then later that day, I got a friend to drive around San Francisco while I was playing in the passenger seat of his car.
Damn, that's nuts.
I played through four or five matches. The fifth match, I did not finish only because someone called me.
Right.
It was a spam call came in. I was like, no.
Oh, and it locked you out of the
It interrupted. Yeah, it kicked me out. So that was cool to me. Like, I was just thinking to myself, the way this thing connects to the internet, this has to be possible. And granted, some folks, I tweeted about it, and some folks were like, man, that's baller status. It's like, no, it's not. Actually, I haven't used this phone in a while. There's plenty of data racked up. And ultimately, even Reddit was kind of chatting back and forth about maybe even the sort of the size of the packets getting sent. The tick rate isn't that high on this game versus some of the more competitive shooters out there that Blizzard and companies have.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's designed to be a mainstream game on a mainstream device. And like, you know, we talked about the radio in the Switch. Like, my reception in the living room when it's docked is actually not that great. Put a second router downstairs, but like, it's not the best connection on the Switch. On my other consoles, it's
How's
fine.
It play?
And so it ran smoothly. Like, I had no issues whatsoever despite that low reception. Maybe it may also be the display that it shows a lower connection than it actually has.
I've never gotten more than 2 bars on my Switch in any scenario.
Have
here,
you played anything online? Like, just because again, reflecting on how did it play versus or download?
No, I mean,
did it feel longer?
I think outside of like Fast RMX, like, what are really the options of stuff to play?
Bomberman, your other one? Yeah,
I think I did some matchmaking in Bomberman that felt fine, but that's like such a lo-fi game, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy. The day that the Switch came out, I downloaded Shovel Knight, I Am Setsuna, and Snipper Clips here at the office at rocket speed.
Yeah, no, and so the weird thing is I
downloaded
games
so fast, and then a couple days later, you know, we started hearing about, like, oh, there's Wi-Fi connectivity issues.
Yeah,
Andrew had a ton.
Andrew had a ton of them. Like, it took him hours and hours to download Zelda. And, obviously, like, I was downloading much smaller games. Setsuna, maybe not so much, but, like, I was completely floored. I started download on all three, walked away, and I came back maybe 45 minutes later and they were all three done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, my downloads have been really fast on mine, but I still visually have never seen more than just those 2 out of 3 bars.
I agree.
Which is odd. Like, I think Pear might be onto something that, like, maybe it's just showing that, but that's not actually what's happening. Like, I don't know where that
it's
sort of visual
before
depiction.
With some phones, too, where they didn't show the full status correctly. Okay. But yeah, I mean, I had no connectivity issues. Mm. It was smooth. We had no lag issues whatsoever.
Probably,
with 3 machines running.
Yeah, I had 3 matches I got kicked out of in general over the course of the whole beta, though, which is kind of in line with what I would expect. I would think.
Will this game have a single player campaign?
Presumably.
Okay.
Especially
the first one did,
presumably.
But one guy got kicked out of a match, like we lost one player.
Yeah, I've saw matches where I was losing people, where we were down one or the other team was down one or two at one point. I felt bad for that team. Let's get to some feedback, though. So matchmaking was quick, but you can't quit matchmaking, which is still like, okay, this was a Splatoon 1 thing, and I get it. Like, I really respect that matchmaking in Splatoon is a very, very fast affair. And I'm not 100%, I don't think Nintendo has done a great job of communicating what team balance looks like either.
Yeah.
Specifically because I'm just not convinced that matchmaking, locking people into matchmaking the way it is effective. Why is it that way? Is it because you want people to queue into games really quickly? Are you not allowing me to, here's my second gripe, I still can't switch my brush or my equipment between matches.
Yeah, they need load up.
That seems silly that you wouldn't be able to do
like
load up.
Is that the beta issue?
I really hope
that's
so.
In the final game.
Maybe they're just testing it this way for beta, but if you're listening, like, this is something that I didn't like about the first game, and I still don't like about the second game.
Yeah, why even offer all those items on that menu because they look so cool to not even be able to switch between levels?
Yeah, and I'm not asking for someone I was talking to about this said, well, it should be like Overwatch where I can switch between each death. I'm like, I don't know if I need it to be like that. Like, I think Overwatch, that plays into what that game is, because it is a game very much built around checks and balances.
Right.
Oh, character X is on the field, character Y is the answer.
That's there to counter them, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think Splatoon really works that way.
Oh, the game is so fast. I mean, it would definitely change the dynamic. Like, I wouldn't say let's not do that. That might be appropriate for a certain mode where, like, you have a countermeasure. Like, if somebody's kicking ass with a roller, then you're going to pick, like, the dualies or something that is strong against them.
Or something,
like,
with some damage.
Or a charge
range.
Shot. Or
spot charger.
Like, I could see that, but it would definitely change the dynamic. I can't tell if it's good or bad without playing that. But, like, they do need loadouts. Like, we've played matches in Splatoon 1 where it's a team of four rollers and you're like, that's not going to work, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you want somebody who is a sniper up high and like that. You want to be able, as it's matchmaking, to say, oh, no, crap, I'll go and pick a different weapon. And, like, granted, this version also had you couldn't customize your character. It would auto-switch for you.
Yeah, and they still did
and
that.
So maybe this is just different code. So let's hope they learned that from the first.
I agree. Yeah. And then just a couple of other little bits. No new modes shown, just you're keeping it straight to Turf War, which I don't think is a terribly bad thing because you have plenty of time before this game comes out. You said summer. Presumably, you're going all in at E3 and you're going to really talk about this game. I think that's why you're saving everything, if anything.
Makes sense.
You want to get up on stage because Splatoon is, or your digital presentation, however you do it. But Splatoon's really big in Japan. It's, in fact, probably one of the reasons Switch will do well
this
year. Like, everyone's going to want it for that.
What's the release date for this game right now?
A date, just summer. Yeah, is all they've said.
Interesting. I always thought it'd be, in the next few months.
But
I mean, summer is in the next few months.
Yeah, it is. It's coming up faster than you think. E3 is, around the corner. It's kind of scary.
Stop it.
Let's not talk about it. So my other thing is just another weird schedule where it's like, well, for these 6 hours... you can play, and they were generous. Like 5 minutes before the hour would start, the servers would turn on. So I was like jumping into matches early. But it's like, listen, man. I get it. I get it that betas like this are more they're PR. They're goodwill PR, where it's like, oh, check out how cool this experience is. But having these odd start end times and end time start times and end times, you're trying to appease three territories.
When was it, was 4 in the morning?
Yeah, what was the window?
My daughter set her alarm.
Really?
To wake up and play Splatoon?
I don't think she woke up.
Yeah.
I'm like, don't do it. Don't do it.
I mean, I like the first Splatoon, but not 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. No, the game's fun. You were going to ask a question. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to ask, what were the windows of availability for this beta? Non-beta.
They were 1 hour. Fair. Yeah, it was basically...
1 hour at a time. It was like Friday at noon, Pacific time.
Yep.
There was one later that night, Friday night.
7 or 8?
Yeah.
So it was noon, it was 8 o'clock, and it was 4 in the morning. And if you looked at the different times, it was basically trying to appease like America, Europe, and Japan. Because they play global.
Right.
But my problem with that was... a day. Just give us a full day.
And also loading up the app... didn't exactly tell you that.
No. Yeah.
And that was an issue because I was like, oh, it's not working right now. And it just kind of said, cannot connect to a match and booted you out. And I'm like, when can we do this?
Yeah.
Right. And it didn't say that. And if you went over to the news column on the side of your Switch, if you're trying to do everything from there, right? Which I think they should think about that stuff more often now that this is where we're heading. Instead of having to be like, I'm looking at my phone, I'm following Nintendo of America on Twitter, or they're tweeting out that this thing's going live in an hour, or I screen cap the schedule somewhere. To me, that feels sort of unnecessary.
Yeah.
Get all the information right there on the app. When I load up the app, it should say Splatoon Global Test Fire. These are the hours coordinating to the time you're in right now.
That's fair.
Then I got my information. I know when to set it. You know, maybe let me set an alarm on my Switch.
Well, and in the news tab, they have that information.
Yeah.
So it lives on your Switch, but it still should be right in your face within the app itself.
It didn't build it into the game. Like, even when the test fire ended, it just says couldn't connect to server. It doesn't say it's over. Or anything, right? Whereas my kids were still playing. So I'm like, oh, maybe I'm getting the server error. Let me try again. It's like, no, they cut off some of the matches.
I got to give them props, though, on one thing that we don't talk about on this show, I feel, or haven't yet, is the home screen is this smart little billboard for them. Every time you log into your Switch, the left rail is telling you three things that you should know about that are either coming soon, out now, or just a fun tidbit. And I feel like it's a smarter version of what Sony and Microsoft are doing. Where I feel like Microsoft, every blade is trying to sell me something, and it drives me up the wall. I'm just like, I don't care.
Yeah. Yep.
With Sony, certain what's hot will show you things.
Yeah.
What you notice?
I created a dummy Japanese account.
Yeah.
And
so he's
on 50/50 my Switch
on Japanese and English. Ads.
Yeah. So I have this awesome picture of Mario riding a horse in Mario Sports Mix for 3DS, and there's all Japanese stuff underneath it, which could say anything to my imagination. So that's hard to separate, but no, I do love that news tab. It's
smart.
Really cool.
Yeah.
I found myself I watched some of the the Diary Zelda interview things on there just cause I'm holding it and I'm hard to get me to sit down and watch this video hunched over my laptop. But I was laying on my couch, I had my head back, my feet up in the air, and I'm like, I'm going to watch this Zelda thing right now. That's awesome.
Yeah. I feel weird praising marketing. But I have to say that's a smart move by them to just get information in front of people in their own way using their device. And I think it's smarter than what the other two guys are doing.
How did you play Splatoon? I played it with a pro controller.
I played with everything.
You did everything?
Yeah, so
I was just so worried about, I'm going to play the Splat Dualies because they're new, and I'm like, I'm not even going to switch. I'm like going to play that the entire match. I didn't want to change the controllers because like the time was so limited. I didn't experiment.
So I experimented each time I played. I did some in the Joy-Con grip, some handheld. Handheld, they did the smart thing where you don't have to tilt the device too far for like motion aiming.
Yeah.
You also feel weird tilting it, so I found myself just turning with the right stick a little more. I just think that was a natural reflex. Funny enough, though, every Switch game I've played, if you pick up another controller and press a button on it, it goes, oh, wait, would you like to switch controllers and just press L and R? Which, by the way, I didn't know you can bypass by just pressing, I think it's the plus button. You don't have to press L and R. That's a weird thing.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Cheat codes.
I think some games do it, some
add
don't.
It to the wiki.
That's a new thing. Splatoon won't let you switch to another controller. So I tried to go from the the grip to the pro controller, and the pro controller would never register on the matchmaking screen. I tried to do it specifically there because I just felt like changing, and it was like, no, we don't allow that.
It's a beta code.
It's just beta, but it was a small little thing I noticed.
I think like all of the way all the controllers and stuff communicate with Switch is so fascinating to me because no console's ever done anything like this before.
So turnkey.
Like I was able to, I played my Switch for 12 hours on airplanes and in airports in the last like 5 days. And I found myself, I put it in kickstand mode, had airplane mode on, took the side things off, and it was like, you can't do that. You have to put airplane mode off. And I was like, that makes sense. But you couldn't like hit a button on the screen to turn on the airplane mode. So you had to click the sticks
back in, go
back to airplane mode and pop back out. Then I tried playing World of Goo with pointer controls in airplane, without airplane mode on. And that just didn't work. It was like, lay your controller flat. I put it on the tray table on the airplane. I don't know if it was like shaking or whatever because we're in the skies. It's like, they wouldn't let me do it. So there's all these like funny little things, but technically you could bring a pro controller on an airplane and put the kickstand up and play Zelda like that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did do that, but then I was worried about battery.
Or even,
like, when Bluetooth is on like your battery time goes down.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do handheld mode.
Well, what sucks about that is I have, and this is like classic Nintendo, where like for every time they open a door, they close a window or whatever.
I like that. That's kind of cute.
Yeah. Where I was like, all right, I want to put it in kickstand mode and play like this with the controllers on the side, but I also don't want to kill the batteries.
Yeah.
Oh, I have my charging cable. I'll plug that in. Oh, I can't do that in kickstand mode because they put the charging cable down here instead of the other.
I always thought kickstand mode on an airplane was risky, man. Like turbulence. That's the only word I got for you.
Yeah.
And the thing goes flying and you're
airplanes
like, no.
are risky on an airplane.
No, but I'm just saying.
I don't fly first class like you too, but in my setup, like the kickstand made it really kind of
I've literally
low.
Never flown
it
first
wasn't,
class.
It wasn't. It wasn't.
I personally don't think the kickstand goes back far
enough. So kickstand didn't work for me. Yeah. Like it was, and so there's that custom stand, the Hori one.
Yep.
I've seen Gion in our design team
uses
an iPad, like this industrial iPad stand that works amazingly well for
really?
The Switch.
So, yeah.
And it has a pass-through for the charge cable
Sweet.
Too.
Yeah.
See, I would love something that was just like compact and foldable that you could just like throw in your Switch case that props it up, that leaves enough room underneath for a cable.
Well, it makes me wish
doesn't this work? Doesn't this have the...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You can use that.
Yeah, but you can't charge it at the same
time. That's a better angle, too, because I feel like this angle is so tight. No. Like, I want it like this.
Yeah, I do wish the kickstand in general had been just a panel. Like, have you seen, like, Windows...
Yeah, one of the ones that, like, folds
tablets?
Out. Yeah,
yeah just the whole back panel just goes whoop, and it's out, and you have something that's
like
stands
with a little
stable.
Magnetic thing on it? Like,
yeah.
I'm totally with
like
you on that.
So did you use the Joy-Con in Splatoon detached?
Yeah, I did. Right is tilt, is for aim, basically.
And it worked. Well,
yeah, I was fine.
I
mean, it's not as comfortable. Yeah, as I would like. Like
game,
with the
Splatoon is.
Yeah. No.
So much more Twitch,
dude. I expect people to get crazy good at it. Just like there was a subset of people who Mario Kart Wii with the steering wheel, they owned everyone.
How?
Like,
that's so nuts. Who? I want to meet these people. Yeah. How?
There were already some folks.
It took me
you know
all
who
like,
you are.
One course on Mario Kart Wii to be like, no, thank you.
Yeah,
I was controller.
Like,
yeah,
no, it's not gonna happen.
But in Splatoon, there were already a couple of people who were super good at the game. Like you could tell they never stopped playing Splatoon, and they made their way into my match, and I was always happy when they were on my team. But like they're so good at this game that I was a little afraid for people who saw this test fire and said, I'm going to try out the Splatoon. I never played it and went in. It must have been so daunting because it's complete mayhem.
But don't forget, like the key thing this game has that most shooters doesn't is that progress and sort of your contribution is not who you kill, but what you paint.
Yeah.
So I still think that like the original Splatoon where that happened, it was still the effect of like, oh, I just painted this whole area and claimed that for my team. So I'm making progress.
Did the first game have bots?
No, never.
This one does.
Yeah.
Or did not this one does. This one needs them.
Oh, really?
Before I confirm something. No, this one definitely needs them because I think a lot of people are going to be playing this game. Like, single player is a really cool idea. But when you're not tethered, when you're on airplane Wi-Fi or whatever, wherever you are.
You may want to play mode.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I was playing multiplayer Bomberman against bots on the plane the other day, and I'm like, this is fun. Like, it's fun. Like, they're not as smart as players, but it's fun. It's just a nice novelty to have.
You can say there were certain single player stages in Splatoon that the Octoling was definitely like a bot because they were shaped and looked just like a Splatoon character, which makes you wonder, will they be playable in this or not?
Yeah, it wouldn't be too much work for them, I think, to add bots. But like, we may find Splatoon 2 to be exactly like the first one where it launches with a limited set of stuff and then they'll add.
Oh, that's happening. I'm willing to bet that,
like,
right now.
One of the maps, I forgot the name of it, like the protection against spawn camps was huge. Like the zone that you couldn't get to as the opposing team without doing like the inkjet or something was humongous.
Yeah.
Which means like the strategy is going to be rush out, do everything else, and in the last couple of minutes, that's when you color everything back home.
All right. So in an effort to keep this podcast fresh, because we have to move on, I just need to hear from each one of you. What do you need from Splatoon 2? Like, whether you played the first one or not, what is the thing that you're looking for to pull you back in or to pull you in for the first time?
A kind of more robust tutorial, a great single player campaign, hopefully maybe even porting the last one so more people can play it, and bots in multiplayer, because I'll never be able to be as good as you guys, and I'd rather just fight stupid robots.
But you can be on our team.
I don't want to be on your team. I don't like either of you.
Wow. It's happened here.
Voice chat. 100% it needs voice chat. 2, it needs loadouts.
Yep.
And 3, it needs more variety in map selection when you're playing. Like, I did not like the scheduled kind of limitation of maps and kind of tying it to the different modes. I did like the concept of like special events and things like happening. Like, I love that. I hope they keep that.
So the schedule, though, was to me an inherent solution for we're only rolling out this much content too. So I wonder if that will at all change. If you're listening, you're going to tell this story at E3 clearly, but make sure you answer that question. Zach, is there anything you're looking for?
I just need to finish Zelda. The only reason that I didn't play this last weekend was because any time that I spent with my Switch, I was just playing Zelda.
Yeah.
So I need to do that. But I really liked the first Splatoon. I didn't get super into it because I played pre-release. I played a ton of it pre-release, actually. I finished all the single-player stuff and was doing like competitive matches before the game actually came out. And then when the game did come out, my save was nuked, and I didn't want to start over.
All the progress didn't carry.
So I never went back to it and said, like, okay, I'm going to get back into Splatoon because I had to. There was such a huge gap that I needed to clear to get back to where I was previously. So I think coming into the ground level of Splatoon 2, like, I'm already all in. And it sounds like what you guys are saying, test fire-wise, it's shaping up to be pretty solid. So, like, I'm definitely going to pick it up and get right into it. So
you guys are doing a video series for IGN called Link Together,
right,
which I absolutely love, where
you
take the two controllers off.
I know where this is going.
Each person has one controller, and you're playing Zelda.
Yeah.
Are we going to get Splatoon Link together?
Are we going to get inked?
Are you going to be the jump?
Inked together?
Inked
you have to
together.
Get a tattoo together, then that means two at the start.
Brian and I already have matching tattoos.
I don't have half a tattoo each person.
Yeah. That could work.
Like a Joy-Con.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so let's move forward to, I think the next game would actually be a really good Link Together game, and I think it would be Snake Pass.
What?
I think Snake Pass would be near impossible to play.
Yeah.
Or we need some sort of a challenge round, but let's talk about it. So Snake Pass, this is the first Unreal 4 Engine game that is running on Switch. Brian and I are playing. Is anyone else playing it right now?
I've watched you, and I'm downloading it right now I saw you play it.
I played at the Nintendo preview event that you and I went to about a month ago.
I did too.
I played a few stages there. Yeah.
Okay,
that was awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, I had a really good time.
Yep.
I told the story on Beyond this week too, but I had a really tough time sort of adapting to the controls.
Yep.
And then the guy that was giving the demo was like, you gotta think like a snake. And I thought he was being a jerk, and then it was like, oh no, I really, you really do.
You do.
Think like a snake thinks to move around in this game.
So the elevator pitch is you are a snake trying to, it is a puzzle physics-based platformer, essentially, but you are a snake that can't jump, you can only sort of slither your way around the map, and you have to use your points of contact and smart movement to basically snake and coil yourself around things that you want to climb. And that sounds really nebulous because, in fact, it comes across that way. In fact, the controls are like driving a car. You hold R2 to move forward.
Yeah, it is a little like driving
it's
a car.
Yeah,
it's R2 to move forward. You cannot go back. And talk a little bit more about
this. So, yeah, it's a very non-traditional controls game, and that's probably scaring off some of you right now. But to me, it feels like a game I've never played before.
New concept.
It feels like a new type of way of controlling a game. And, I mean, I grew up with the sort of vintage N64 collectathons, and I think this is hitting a lot of those sort of bells and whistles.
Well, not to mention it also looks a lot like one of those games. Like, it's aesthetically, it reminds me, it immediately reminds me of like Banjo-Kazooie
or Viva Pinata.
That's sort of
HD,
rare. Rare look.
It feels like an HD rare game, but
so
what's
rare looking?
It instead
it's
of
sounding.
Yeah,
yeah.
Instead of well, David Wise did the songs for the game, which
that's right.
Banjo-Kazooie,
same guy who scored some classic.
I mean, Donkey Kong Country. Like there's a couple songs in this game that like really evoke like the underwater theme song from Donkey Kong Country, which is like one of my favorite video game songs of all time. Really good jam. So what's cool about this game is that it's very relaxing and it's non sort of threatening or combative. There are things that can kill you, but they're not enemies. There aren't bosses. You don't have an attack button. I don't even think your snake has teeth. I don't even snakes have.
It looks
many
confused and or sad when it falls into a pit. And snake.
So
it
you're
this, disappears.
You're
from
a
you.
Snake named Noodle, and you have this buddy named Doodle, who's a hummingbird. He can pick up your tail and help you out, and he kind of flies around and kind of hovers around collectibles every now and then. But you're really about exploring these kind of really big 15 different environments that are all sort of like kind of like relaxing tropical theme. There's like bamboo, there's ferns growing up the sides of things, there's little like canyons and rivers and curls that you can dip around in, twisty slides, and you're manipulating this weird, funny, lanky animal through all these different precarious situations. Sometimes there's bottomless pits, sometimes there's like weird windmills, and you're finding ways to like coil around things and traverse these environments. And it really, to me, it feels like part vintage N64, but also kind of has moments of like Monkey Ball to me, where it's so sort of like precise, but also fun and laid back. I mean, you're trying to
talk about an original concept.
It's like
too.
Monkey Ball Glover kind of variety of platformers, Rocket Robot on wheels, like that heavily relies on physics.
Like,
I mean,
well, it's constantly reminding
you described
you.
It as playing as a wet noodle. It hangs on to something, and like if it gets imbalanced, then slippity slip.
You
right?
slowly
like
slip off down. Of every surface, no matter how well positioned you think you are. And I think that's very clever. I also think what's really clever is the control scheme, because like I was explaining earlier, you have R2 to move forward, but the smartest piece of the controller is that you can lift your head at any moment. And so a lot of it is figuring out when is the best moment to let your head sag and try to like coil it around something else, or lift, turn, and then use your muscle
and
to basically
thread the
get
needle
up
around things. Right?
Yeah, and the more points of contact you have with a surface, the better you can move, which is at first you can't quite grasp it because you've never played anything like this. At least I haven't. I feel like most of us have not.
And it's got a very tangible feel to it, right? Like it actually feels like you're physically manipulating this object in a 3D space in a logical way as if you would in reality, right?
Exactly.
Well, I think one of the things that it's easy to forget when you start playing it is that there's no grip. There's no grip control. Like there's no like tension to your movement. So like you're saying, like if you have a column, it's a lot harder to wrap yourself around it and climb up than if you have a column with pegs sticking out of it. Then you can use the pegs to wind your way up. And it's constantly reminding you that gravity is real and it will drop you into a bottom.
And there is there is a grip button, but there's no, you are not Velcro.
Right.
You
don't that's
stick
a better way
to any surface. You slide off and it's just natural. And the way the physics and the way this game works and plays, it is so entertaining to watch because you're watching someone sort of just creatively find their way around how to get up an object. And in a lot of ways, it's just something that everyone will approach it differently. Like
totally,
my technique
totally.
Early on when I was really nervous was to sort of coil around an object, flop the head over the side. They go, all right, we're going to swing around the other side and yep. slink around to the top. Do it again. It was sort of
but
like
sometimes
tying
you,
a knot.
Sometimes you kind of slag too hard and you just look like a sad hula hoop hanging from a tree. And like your head's too low and you can't pick your head up and you're like, and it just looks very derpy. Like there's this very like funny like sort
the
of
expressions on the snake are
so great.
Yeah.
And the D-pad actually have different expression buttons, so you can kind of like you get to the top of a hill and you're like, you make this dumb thing with your mouth.
But it's a game that when you watch it, you instantly understand it. Like I was watching you for like 10 seconds, I'm like, okay, I get it. I want to play it.
Yeah.
I think it's perfect for like Switch too, because I think specifically having something like this on in a handheld, first of all, it feels very Nintendo. Like it feels like their idea of like we took a really like Nintendo's design philosophy is usually like we have this amazing gameplay mechanic or this hook, this control method first, and then the characters sort of become secondary. So it feels like a Nintendo game. Yeah. It's charming and it's like bright and colorful, but it's also something that you can play for just a few minutes, get a few collectibles, hit the home button, and X out. You know,
and then, I think value wise, right? Like it's a $20 game. What do you get? Like three, four hours out of it, or how long?
I want to say it's probably like 6 hours. Yeah. It depends on your collector's bug. Like you can play it just to collect the three things that you need to get out of a stage. Mm-hmm. I think you're playing it wrong if you play it that way personally. Like it is one of those collectible driven platformers where you just want to find as much stuff as you can. Mm-hmm. So if you were to play that way, I think you could probably get through it in 3 hours. Yeah. Although you will not learn the nuance that you need. I feel like the collectible game is also part of just getting more
puzzle
comfortable
solving
controls.
And,
I will say though that as the progression ramps up, they get nasty with you a little bit. Like the first couple of stages, the first few worlds of the 15, I want to say more than the first third of the game, is very gentle with you on the idea that, okay, if I had to coil up this microphone stand, for example, there's always ground underneath me to catch me, or a pool of water or something, so that, I messed up. All right, let me just go back up there again. Later stages, that turns into spike pits and bottomless pits.
Right.
Much, much later in the game, they introduce the concept of wind, which is not your friend.
I haven't gotten there yet. I'm trying to like, I'm doing sort of a completionist run, right? And I'm good at getting every collectible in every stage before I move on to the
That's
next
fun.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the way I play like New Super Mario Brothers and stuff like that. Get all the gold coins and keep moving. And I'm kind of right about to see the other shoe drop with this game where it starts to get a lot more challenging.
Yeah.
I think getting to the goal is probably pretty easy. And in some cases, like the goal's right there in front of you and you have to collect these three different colored orbs to open up that goal. But there's also like 7 gold coins per level and like 20 blue orbs, and collecting all of them is how you 100% it. And like I played a game a level for an hour today, and I just sat down for 10 minutes and found that last gold coin.
Yeah,
and
it's a good feeling when you do.
And it's great because now I'm done with that stage and I'm moving on. But
the camera is an issue in this game. I feel like it doesn't keep up with you. Just to paint the full picture for folks, that's something that when you're coiling around objects, it repositions itself in weird places. When you're on a moving object, oh my, like where the camera ends up sometime, you're like, what? Why am I dealing with this? And then it's slow to turn, which is another issue I'm having with it. Like a game where the physics will dictate how long you'll stay alive and stay on the sort of clinging to this branch or bamboo or whatever. If the window to save it is a couple of seconds long, I should be able to quickly like swing the camera around. Now, here's the thing that I'm learning though. Whereas when I started like 6 hours in or 8 hours in, I felt like I could never save it. I've gotten to the point where now I can. But it takes such a long time to get there. Like I finished the game before I got that confidence to really be that good.
Yeah.
And I just think it is an issue. Also, the checkpoint system is a bit stingy, I feel. Whereas, you know, there are checkpoints laced with all over the level, and you bank whatever collectibles you've picked up at those checkpoints. But here's the thing. Sometimes you'll do what seems to be just an impossible maneuver. Like something you're like, there's no way I can make that. Yeah. There is no way. There is a way. You can make it. But after you've cleared it and you're like, oh, I need a checkpoint, there's none around and you have to keep going. So if you fall on the next thing, you got to do it over again. Back, so it starts falling into that repetitive, like, oh, I'm not getting it. You feel like you're being punished, but I still feel like in the end, you are getting better at controlling it. And I think that's why the developer went with that system.
Okay.
Not saying I agree. Just saying that I think is a slight issue.
And I think it changes your play style too. Like I've found myself adjusting to like, I'll go out hunting for a collectible or two. I'll find one and then immediately go back to the checkpoint, go back bank out it. There, get yep. another one, bank another one, bring them all back to the bank. And I think the camera definitely can be cumbersome.
Mm-hmm.
I think more so with the fact that you're dealing with a fairly non-traditional control scheme,
yes.
which means that you are holding the Switch. I was telling you the other day, I thought I was going to break my Joy-Con because yeah. I'm squeezing on with dear life with that R trigger to be like, don't let go of that branch. Now over here, I'm lifting up his head. Yeah. And over here, I'm like, you know, making him smile because that's important. Yeah. And then I'm trying to control the camera at the same time and wiggling him around. Yeah. And all
my
of a sudden, it's
really
like,
sweaty too.
Yeah. And you're 20 feet up in the air on this like bamboo spike, and you're trying to reach a gold coin with your derpy mouth. And at the last second, you got to tilt ever so slightly so the camera doesn't let you down.
And that's the thing. Sometimes they put a collectible just right out of reach, and it feels impossible. And you're like, there's no way I can get that. And yet, with practice and with confidence, you learn, oh, I can. But I feel like the lessons they're trying to teach are maybe too compressed within what they're trying to do. Maybe that's why they went with this checkpoint system. I'm not sure. Other quick thing to note, there are no time trials on the Switch version at launch. Oh, PS4 and PC does. I believe Xbox One should. I haven't played that version yet. I am reviewing it, by the way. Mm. The lighting is not as sharp on Switch, at least in the launch version. They released a patch today, which looks a little better than I remember it looking, especially in handheld mode, where the first day it looked way too jaggy in handheld mode. After the patch, I picked it up and I was like, oh, this looks a little cleaner to me. I'm not sure.
In handheld mode, I thought on the first day, I thought there was like something on my screen because it just had this like weird Vaseline.
It was a little blurry.
To it.
Yeah, I agree.
But I think they patched that and it looks a little better now. So
I got to keep testing, but it looked better to me. And then there was a really bad Joy-Con issue day one. Which is patched now, that your Joy-Con would go absolutely, like it was like someone had the volume up to 11 on the rumble.
No, I was telling you, I had to shut mine off.
On a circus. Weird.
I was on an airplane and it was nighttime and people like were waking up. It was like,
it was really weird. As he's trying to like stay on the bridge, no! So I mean
it was that loud in your head.
Oh, dude,
it's only really on loud. Joy-Con too. On pro controller, it was fine.
There was a couple other games. There was one other game at launch that just had a ridiculously loud rumble. I think people just got really excited
Faster
about that.
Faster MX, right? Faster MX, I think.
Faster MX, and they patched it. Yeah. But it was incredibly loud on launch day. Like you were just like you would crash your car and be like, and you're like, oh my god.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to move on, but quickly just want to throw out some notes. First of all, Gem, which I think was Graceful Exposure Machine. Mo Bean was on our show from Vertex Pop. That has a release date. That's April 4th, April. Right? Yeah, it's next week.
Game looks awesome.
And also, be really happy. Fun. Be excited, Brian, because OG Metal Slug comes out this week.
I already bought it.
Yeah. Oh, yep. You got the Japanese one?
I love Metal Slug.
Yeah.
Metal Slug is out right now on the Nintendo Store, on the American eShop.
Oh, okay. I thought it was we were still waiting for it. It's probably up now.
So for those keeping track at home, if you're weird like me, they've so far released Metal Slug 3 2 weeks ago and Metal Slug 1 now. So what?
Okay. Yeah, what's going on?
That's actually canonically the order of those games.
God.
That's
how much is it?
$7.99. Yeah. I'm pretty sure $7.99. I wish Arcade Archives, like I just don't know where to follow what game's coming out. I found their website and it's very old looking. I just wish there was a little bit more of a push behind these games because they're cool arcade classics, and we talked about them on the
Twitter account I follow, but it's all like Japanese.
That's not gonna help me.
They're getting their release dates differently than we are. So, but yeah, I mean, that being said, like Arcade Archives have been supporting. I've been buying them on PS4 for years now. They make a lot of cool games there. Stuff like Contra, Double Dragon, Bubble Bobble were all them. They do really great ports, a lot of great emulation options in terms of resolution and borders and stretching the screen to however you want to do it. One of the cool things they're doing, which I'm really excited for some of the old shmups, are vertical mode. So basically like tape mode.
Or rad.
Like, so yeah, if you'll get a stand, you'll be able to play shmups vertically. And some Vita games experimented with this. And so the idea of having that on Switch is really
cool. The fact
cool
that you can remove the controllers, like that's it.
Because I mean, a lot of arcade games were big, tall standees like that. So
that's cool.
Oh, yeah. Man, what was the GameCube like classic?
Ikaruga?
Yes.
Yeah. Dude, put Ikaruga on Switch in vertical mode. I'm all over that. I used to turn my TV sideways for that.
We just need Namco to make like a special controller kind of cradle thing for it. So
I love that.
It's like maybe it has the buttons on the side or something. Oh, that'd be so good.
It's going to be even more annoying on this airplane.
Oh yeah.
All right, so
big rumble.
Yeah, I feel terrible playing timekeeper here, but I want to toss to Zach quickly for a couple of Tales from the Wild in the new Zelda. Zach hasn't been on for a little bit, and I know that you've been recovering from a surgery.
Yeah, I had
a lot of time to play.
I'm about 75 hours into Zelda, and Yeah, that's a very good game.
You didn't sit in front of a window and witness the neighbor murder or something like
no,
that?
No, you're talking about like a rear window situation? Yeah. No, none of that. Mostly just Zelda.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I've been playing the hell out of it. I think I'm about 70 shrines deep, and I just did my third Divine Beast last night, the Gerudo, or two nights ago, the Gerudo Beast, which was fine, Jose. That's Jose's favorite one.
That's my favorite one.
I wasn't super keen on it. But yeah, I'm really enjoying my time with it. I think there's sort of this, like, I think with this game especially, everybody has a moment where the game's obviously, like, very good from the outset. And I think, especially being in the press, like, we were sort of spoiled in the fact that we played the opening of the game. Like, by the time March 3rd rolled around, the game was out, I'd gotten off the Great Plateau, like, two or three times. Yeah. But I hadn't necessarily done anything much beyond that.
And we hadn't seen a single talking character outside of Weird Beard. Is that his name?
Yeah. Cass Weird Beard,
that,
yeah.
That, Game Awards.
Yeah, Cass was in the Game Awards. Yeah,
when we played, we only played Plateau.
No, right? Sure. Yeah.
Weird Beard.
Well, yeah.
Uncle Father Man.
Yeah. But I think that for me, I was probably, I mean, it was really, really early on, but there's a shrine that you need I always butcher it. Is it Cryonis?
Yeah. Cryonis.
Cryonis, yeah. Cryonis. Yeah. So there's this like thing that you get off the Great Plateau and you're still kind of getting your feet wet and you're still kind of getting a feel for the game itself. And like,
it's a lake right outside.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah. But no, I just feel like for me personally, I was having such a hard time conceptualizing what the game was outside of just sort of running around and experimenting with stuff. Like, and it was fun, but I was like, I don't really know what I'm doing. I don't really know, like, these shrines are great, but I'm not really super comfortable in them yet. And like, I don't feel like I really get the point outside of obtaining these orbs to upgrade my stuff. And as black and white as that should be, I think you kind of get this, there's this general sense of like, what, you know, what am I supposed to be doing here?
Yeah.
And there's a shrine early on, basically like en route to Kakariko Village, that you use
Cryonis.
Cryonis. And a ball is rolling down these series of ramps, and so there's a gap in this one long ramp, and then there's a basically like a seesaw on a wall far away from you that has water running down.
You're painting this picture.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? You know the exact shrine. It's on Dueling Peaks.
Yeah.
And you have to use it. You have to use your power to set up the ice blocks so that the ball will roll, like stop in the appropriate spots, roll to the appropriate spots, prop up the appropriate thing so that it drops into the hole. And the first time that I figured it out, like, had, you know, moved those ice blocks just left and right a little bit to make sure that the ball went in the right. The first time that it dropped into that slot and the gate opened up, I could just feel this big smile spread across my face, and it was like, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Right. Like, now I understand. Like, now, like, I remember, like, texting, I think I texted you, and I was just like, okay, I love this game. Like, I love it. I'm 100%.
You told me you wanted to move to a state where you could legally marry.
Yeah.
If I can quote.
Yeah. Jose was texting me, because I was home for 2 weeks, and I think one of the things that I know I talked to you guys about quite a bit, but having surgery, being out for 2 weeks the day after the new AAA Zelda title comes out, I was very concerned with the fact that I'd be missing so much of the conversation that was happening here. And like Sam was saying to me, Sam Claiborne was saying, you know, he's slacking me, sending me messages and saying, everyone's playing it in groups, like sitting around playing in groups. Everyone's talking about it all day. Like, it's a crazy time to be at IGN. And I was like, okay, well, I'm just home by myself playing Zelda. Aww. But I was texting these guys, and, you know, Jose had texted me probably like later in the first week, and he goes, well, what do you think of it? And I was like, well, I said, here's X, Y, and Z. Here are my thoughts. And he goes, but bottom line, like, you like it. And I was like, Jose, I would move to a country that would legally marry this game. Like, I love this game so much.
Yeah.
And I think that those conversations ultimately are going to be the things that I look back on in Breath of the Wild. And like, when was the last time that you played a game where you're talking to somebody about it, and it's like, oh, I know where that is. What you need to do is warp to the highest mountain in the Heber region, and if you just go south of the Snowdrift Fields there, you'll find this thing. And like the way that you talk about the geography and the location in that world is so different, and it's like it brings back so much of that like playground mentality.
Flip the script, right? There's also, this is the first game in so long that I'm talking to someone about it, and I'm like, yeah, and did you know, so this and that, and then this happened. What?
Yeah.
That can happen? Yep. And you're like, yes, well, that can happen. I mean, that's a thing.
Okay, you've played through the game twice.
Yes.
You've put in how many hours?
Over 200.
Over 200 hours, yeah, which, yeah. I mean, like, sure, that's 100% acceptable, you know? Mm-hmm. But right before this show started, I was telling you about a shrine that requires a certain puzzle. And Jose was like, stop. Yeah. I don't know what that is. Like, I haven't done that yet. And it was like, to me, that's crazy. Like, invest that amount of time. And Brandon Tyrell, who works here at IGN, really hit the nail on the head talking to me about it, because he was saying, I've never played a game that people talk about their hours of play as like a rite of passage.
Right.
Like,
and
it's
not
never
the
like
things they've done.
Right. Yes. It's never like, you talk about a game and you're like, oh man, I think I must have put 70 hours into it already. In this game, it's like, put 70 hours into it, I've only done 2 Divine Beasts, I still got half the game to play, you know? And it's like, oh really? Well, I've played 90 hours, I've only done one Divine Beast.
Well, there's,
Beast.
That, there's like, that like Homer Simpson, you know, 12-foot party sub thing where he like, he's just gnawing on the sandwich and it's just disgusting by the end, he wants to get rid of it. That's how I treat most open world games, right? Like you're working on them for a while and by the end you're like, oh, I only have these missions left or these missions left. But I feel like with Zelda, even when you've chipped away at so many activities for 90 hours, there's still so much yet left to do. And still the basic just moment to moment of combat, traversal, finding a shrine for the first time, it still feels as fresh now as it does. Like I look back at my earliest moments in that game, my first few hours in that game, and Zach and I are doing Link Together now. Yeah. It's our new series. And like going back and playing that is really funny because I've got like a stick and, you know, a garbage can lid. Like,
yeah.
Just garbage stuff. We got like 3 apples and a steak, you know, that we found on the floor. And you're like, oh man, this poor guy. But you look at where we are now and you just feel so evolved, advanced. You feel like an adult. It feels like graduating high school.
But even so, I had that feeling last night. Sorry. No, it's just I went back to the Great Plateau and it was like, oh, I remember you guys. Yeah, oh, I remember this cave.
Did you see Kirk Hamilton's piece at Kotaku?
Not yet.
He did his great piece. It was like 2 paragraphs.
Sorry, I'm going to throw it back to you.
And he was like, hey, like, remember all those guardians that really messed me up?
Yeah.
I'm going back to kill them.
Yeah.
With like level 50 guardians.
I remember.
Yeah, he's like, I have the Master Sword and the Ancient Armor, and now it's like, hey, it's me. You remember me?
Yeah.
The guy that you trounced when I had 3 hearts and wool pants.
Such a great I did the same thing. I went back to the starting point, looked at the like Temple of Time and everything, looked around, and then like, ooh. The guardian that's sitting in front of that first thing
that shot me.
Yeah. So I went back and I used a metal box and knocked it over.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, and it's like, it's surprising.
And there's stuff underneath when you do that.
Yeah.
People found the Triforce in those first 4 shrines, right? With that weird corpse is making that like different triangles with his hands.
I thought it was the Illuminati.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's throwing up the Rockefeller.
He's a
big Jay-Z fan.
Yep.
And I missed all that stuff because I was just like, ooh, I want to go outside and play.
Yeah.
And now that I'm like this far in, I can stop and kind of smell the roses a little bit because, you know, now I'm looking at the way all the systems work together. But
do you we were talking earlier and you're like, you've not picked up a star fragment, for example, but you gotta be 100 hours in.
Yeah, it's crazy. Right?
And like I, for the first time yesterday, I noticed that when you're on Death Mountain and the heat is like completely out of control, if you go to your menu in the lower left corner, it says error.
Oh,
did
really?
You see that?
No.
Yeah, like the machine can't work because it's too hot. Like
really
it has all these little things that you'll find.
Check your map if you're in a sandstorm. I will tell you that too. There's a funny little thing there as well. No, and hopefully next week we can finally do the enormous spoiler cast. Thing like I'm Brendan Graber made me promise not to do it while he was on vacation. He's on vacation this week, so we're gonna figure that one out and work it.
I'm just pushing that Ganon fight down the road.
Yeah,
it's there.
And I think what's really funny about that is it. By now, I'm seeing a lot of people that I follow on Twitter or something like that are posting like beat Zelda last night. Like, here's a screenshot that's like Calamity Ganon defeated. Whatever. Like a lot of people are finishing this game and. to me personally, like I'm not in a rush to get to the end. I want to beat the game. And to me, finishing the game,
yeah.
And to me, finishing the game means finishing all 120 shrines, yep. upgrading, maxing out like two or three different armor sets that I really love,
yep.
and then like finishing like three or four side quests that I've been holding off on because like I just really want to do, like I want to find that big horse, yeah, I want to do yeah. this other thing, you know, like
yeah.
there's like a very specific number of terms that I have for myself before I'm like, great, now I can go take
and,
my
and that's the wonderful thing. You set your own terms for what you want to do. For this playthrough, I decided to storm the castle without taking out any divine beasts.
Yeah, it was funny following following you because you're like, ah, oh, I'm in my second playthrough and I'm gonna do X, Y, and Z, and then the next tweet was like, I went into and fought Ganon anyway, whatever.
Like, yeah, I was like, it's time.
It's no, so but cool. then last the multipath stuff is so awesome.
Well, and that's the thing. Then you can define your own fun by... last night, I was shooting bokoblins with ice arrows and then posing for selfies with them. Like, I would pull out the selfie cam and be like, click!
Yeah.
I just wish there was a better way to share those photos, but I agree.
I mean, if you want more of these stories, we did a really good episode of BitFight. Just Google BitFight. I'll look for it on
you
YouTube.
You saw the Eventide?
We did an Eventide Island Challenge.
Owned
you guys,
it. Owned it. Yeah, spoiler
you guys
warning.
Basically had to play. You guys had an advantage. So you had full powers and high hearts. Like I went to that thing with
too much.
I went to that thing with four hearts. I'm like, this is not
I told
good.
Mitch I, afterwards, yeah, and his defense was, oh, I want people to be able to beat it. I'm like, yeah. dude.
Oh, no. I barely even got there with the stamina I had. I was dying in the air. I was like, ah! And then it landed on the island.
I did Eventide. I got to Eventide really early on in the game,
mm-hmm.
Probably like four or five hearts in, and definitely was like, no, I got to come back like 20 hours from now.
Well,
came back later when I had 9 or 10.
It was easy,
and,
right?
Well, yeah. I think they purposely put it where they did too, because I finished the game and didn't find it until after. And I think it's one of those things that they just don't expect you to find till much later.
Okay,
it's
found it so fast.
Yeah, it's interesting.
There's those two shrines that are there, and there's a boat next to one of them, and you're like, where's that go?
You took a boat there?
Yeah, I did. I took a boat.
Yeah, you can do the boat. Yeah,
take a boat there. What are you
doing? All right.
I glided in there like a crazy dude.
So let's transition over to news. Coming up, let's talk about Rocket League on Switch and the possibility of this actually happening. And what would it take? What would we want to see from it? So this story specifically comes from a conversation that we had recently with Vice President of Psyonix Studios. His name's Jeremy Dunham.
Oh, Jeremy
Dunham. Has a history with IGN. Used to work here, right?
Used to run editorial team.
Oh, wow. Okay, so he basically gave us a quote talking about that they're evaluating the possibility and the various factors involved. He said, just like all other platforms, we are evaluating it. We're looking to see what the technical requirements are. We're looking to see what kind of true community demand there is. We're looking to see how it would benefit the community as a whole. So we're still in that evaluation phase. It's definitely too early to say that it wouldn't happen, but it's also definitely too early to say that it would. So this is a dodge. He's not answering
Jeremy,
the question.
You've become the man.
But Rocket League has now reached 29 million unique users, registered players, according to Psyonix, which
That's
is awesome.
Insane.
This is 2016's
really
most
cool
downloaded game on PS4. Granted, reminder, this was available for free on PSN at one point.
Yeah.
It was PlayStation Plus, but it didn't matter. That only helped fuel the fire. But this, I feel like Rocket League is still a big deal, and I think it deserves a place on Switch. One of the things I would like to see if this deal happens is, okay, why don't you and Nintendo look at this and say, all right, let's do some specific Nintendo flags, Nintendo-themed cars. Make it happen. Fans will
Mario
eat that
cars.
Up.
Yeah.
See that, but
only
be careful,
there was some
right?
sort of Mario car.
Yeah. like Hot Wheels has gotten a Mario freaking crossover. Like, you telling me Rocket League can't?
Those are
that?
Scary as hell, though.
Mercedes also got a Mario crossover.
That's right.
So.
That was a one way bridge. We didn't see like a Mushroom Kingdom Mercedes Benz. Oh God.
Like,
terrifying.
Multiplayer is in Nintendo's DNA. Like, multiplayer, especially split screens, always been a staple of these machines. This machine comes with two controllers right out of the box. I think it's perfect. And it's not a graphically intensive game to do. The only thing that this game has is a kind of like an update schedule, like a Splatoon or like a Minecraft, right? Where you get more and more content over time. And so, you know, it would need a DLC strategy and Nintendo enabling that via the store. But like, everything about this game is perfect for the Switch, I think.
Yeah, and it's not I don't want people to look at it and be like, well, that's old. It's like, no, it's not. People are still playing this game, and it is very relevant.
Played, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you haven't played Rocket League, it is basically soccer with cars. It is off the 2v2. Wall and change. Yeah, 2v2. Yep. You ride on the walls. You can block a goal in a way that you never thought possible.
You flip your car over to do like these dramatic air shots.
Yes. Yep.
The only thing is the Switch doesn't have an analog trigger, and like you want to use Nuance when you're controlling the cars in that game, but you know you could do stuff with the right thumbstick or whatever. Like there are ways around that with increments, but but still, it'd be so awesome on this machine, especially if they add Mario cars.
The more that I play Switch out in the wild, because like I said, for the first couple of weeks that I had my Switch, I was at home only. But the more that I take it out to like the airport and like take it on a plane, take it into work, into the office, and play it here, the more I start thinking like I want every game on the Switch. Like every time, like you and I are talking about, we're playing Persona 5, and like I would love to be home or here now and just be like, okay, I have 20 minutes after lunch. Like I'm just gonna play a little bit. I'm gonna grind a little bit.
Some social grinding. Yeah.
But I think one of the things, especially about multiplayer, if I'm here at the office or I'm at the airport and I'm on Wi-Fi, it seems like a no-brainer to me. Like if Splatoon can work so seamlessly over Wi-Fi and you can be playing competitively anywhere, then why not Rocket League? Why not a game like Overwatch?
Yeah,
or
Mario Kart's at the end of next month. That's going to be another one. Yeah. You'll be like, oh, I'm at a coffee shop. I'm going to do some Mario Kart.
That's
okay, we're done.
Next month?
That is April 28th. Yeah,
that rules.
That is coming sooner than you think.
Yeah.
No, I completely agree. And I just think like, granted, Minecraft is the bigger version of what Rocket League is, right? Like Rocket League to multiplayer doesn't really compute to what Minecraft is, but Minecraft was still something that Nintendo got late, and they made sure that when they did, there was a unique hook to it. There was a Mario theme thing to it. And I swear, like when that thing hits Switch, you know there's going to be another tie-in like that. Whether it's Zelda or not, that would be amazing. Yeah. An amazing fit for Minecraft to have a Zelda-themed sort of direction for it. Whether or not Nintendo takes that will be an entirely different question. But I think that Rocket League can work on Switch, and I think that Nintendo should get on the ball with that.
Psyonix, too.
Yes, and Psyonix, too. So next story is about, so what is going on with LEGO City Undercover? Like, have you seen the confusion around this thing?
Yeah, I think we landed on the entire game is on the cart.
Okay.
Is that where we are with this?
I think that's where we are.
So there's a 13 gig patch or something? What was it?
No, so I think
I could take us through if you want.
You do this.
Okay, and now I'm going to let you guys jump in with the opinions.
This is a remake of the Wii U game, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Good Lego game on the Wii U. Basically,
coming
Lego
to everything.
Lego Grand Theft Auto.
Lego GTA.
At the time, it was just Wii U. It came to other platforms afterwards.
It's coming to other platforms.
It hasn't reported anything else yet.
But it was single player. That was the big departure from the other Lego games, which this game rectifies. So we're actually looking forward to it.
They're adding co-op in this version.
Yeah. Yep. So on Reddit, someone was able to obtain official box art. They bought the game, it looks like. They had a physical version of Lego City Undercover. And on the box, right on the front, near the bottom, requires an internet connection, which people are like, okay, what does that mean? Then you flip it over to the back. Up to 13 gigabytes of storage required for game download. It's like, so right away, that image set off a whole bunch of, what does this mean? Mm-hmm. Why is this a thing? Which
also,
then led
dealing,
to
dealing
oh no,
with
please.
A system that has 32 gigabytes of internal storage.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
And then you have an eShop listing that says that the game is only 7.1 gigabytes of download. So where are the other eight coming from? Or excuse me, other six coming from? So then the following statement was provided to IGN by Warner Brothers and Warner Brothers representative. Players who purchase Lego City Undercover on Nintendo Switch at retail do not need to download the game to play. All players who purchase the game can download the small content update patch with an internet connection. That was all
small
I wanted to say.
Small content update patch.
Yeah. So it's not 13 gigs. We pressed for more info. We got a second statement. The information listed is listed incorrectly on the packaging of Lego City Undercover for Nintendo Switch. Players who purchase a physical copy of Lego City Undercover on Nintendo Switch at retail are getting the complete game and do not need additional content to enjoy the full experience. An internet connection is not required to play the game. The only internet connection suggested is to download the typical content update patch.
Okay.
Okay. So
it's resolved.
So lots of brouhaha over nothing, then, is what you're saying.
Somewhat. I mean, because folks immediately tried to extrapolate this mishap and possibly misprint, or I guess it's a misprint, into there's also this story growing about how much does a cartridge cost to get made on a Nintendo platform.
Yeah.
And of course, the natural reality is cartridges cost more to manufacture than Blu-ray discs. Yeah. That is no one is refuting that.
Correct.
For some independent developers and for some smaller publishers, it seems to be surprising to them. And so some stories have been written. Eurogamer ran something about why they cost so much, why Rime is $10 more, for example, based on, you know, speculative but still good reporting. Just interestingly enough, we talked to some developers and have heard, hey, man, this has always been the story with cartridges on any Nintendo anything. Like, it's never been that they were a cheaper solution. So why are people so up in arms over this?
Right.
Yeah, I think they thought that because the cartridges were more expensive, that publishers were opting for cheaper cartridges, so not the bigger size ones, and then basically punting that savings or lack thereof onto the consumer, who then had to download additional stuff. So if your game is
not true,
so if your game is 40 gigs, and the publisher opted for a 32 gig file, they were effectively theorizing that that 8-gig download would have to come from the eShop, which means it's eating into your internal memory or an SD card you had to buy. Mm-hmm. So either way, it's like it didn't feel like good consumer practice because you know, you'd have to buy an SD card, you'd have to eat up 32, you know, a third of your fourth or your 32-gig space. But it doesn't seem like that's the case with this game specifically. This might happen again. Who knows? But it's not happening here.
And then we have not heard from any developer saying that these cartridges are so expensive that's an issue.
Yeah.
Like, have you heard anybody say that? And we heard this plenty of times during the N64 age where cartridge cost was like $30.
Well, especially because CD's
the publisher.
CD, like the whole process behind doing disc-based media for a console wasn't really done.
Right.
And so like the savings must have been out of control. When you think about it, comparing the times.
But now, like, I don't think the cost is... I know the cost is not as high for these
tiny cartridges.
No, of course
not. I mean, the book Game Over has an entire arc in it about Nintendo at the time was effectively strong-arming third parties to make it so they had to buy their proprietary cartridges.
In the NES era,
you
had to order a certain amount, and you had to hope that they all sold because you didn't want to order too many because then you'd have to sell them back to Nintendo.
Yeah.
And there were add-ons.
Very different.
There was battery backup. There were EEPROM, EEPROM Plus, all that kind of stuff, where in the N64 days, some publishers said, I'm not going to have the cartridge save you data. You're going to have to use an external memory card.
Yeah.
Like that also happened, right?
Yeah.
No,
those were cost savings back in the N64 days that don't apply anymore.
Totally.
But then I just feel weird that some folks are throwing this lobbying at Nintendo too, that basically, well, your digital and your retail cost the same. And it's like, well, name any publisher where that's not the truth. That's usually the case. If you're putting something in a retail store as a courtesy to the retailer, you are keeping the digital price the same thing, unless there's a special sale
we've
involved.
We've talked about this before,
or something like that.
What you're gaining in convenience of me not fumbling and dropping my Zelda cart on you know the crack of an airplane is.
That's a weird one.
That's a very weird one. Is the ability to just have it always on board. But what I'm losing is that ability of handing that cartridge to Zach or selling it or finding it in a used game bin for $5. Like, I have to buy Snake Pass digitally.
Yeah,
no,
they went
all
digital only.
Game.
Yeah,
Zelda,
yeah.
I have multiple options. Now, Zelda I bought for $60 digitally on the store. But you can also... Amazon was having like $42 pre-order bonuses discounts for it.
Yeah, for Prime. Yeah.
So far, I've yet to even put... a card into my physical game has not been in my Switch yet.
Yeah,
and all digital. It's like, working out so far.
I mean, I do think the publishers and the developers control their pricing, right? It's an old story that retailers have a lot of power, and that even as you know, if you're releasing a product digitally and physically, that you don't want the retailer on your bad side. That is true, right? Like a publisher could offer different price points for different places, and they will deliberately not do that because they want GameStop on their side.
Yes,
they want Amazon on their side.
Well,
they want to make
sense.
Sure that they get pushed by the retail associates and that they actually sell well in those channels.
Well, and I want to make sure, too, we're not just representing one side, right? Like, clearly, the customer deserves every advantage they should be able to get. Yes, it would be great if digital costs slightly cheaper than what it did at retail, but that's not the norm on any platform, technically, really. And I'm sure there's maybe one or two oddball situations that folks say, oh, no, well, there was this. it's not true across the board.
Definitely not at launch for anything. I mean, what you do get is you get, like, I mean, I'm on Beyond every week, right? A big thing that we like to cover there are flash sales on PSN, where Sony just wakes up in a good mood one day and they're like, hey, all our first party games
$2 for Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah,
go
like,
get
stuff like Journey's like $2.99 for an afternoon, or Bloodborne's $10. Like, you know, that stuff's awesome. It's momentary. It happens for like a weekend, then it goes away. Retail prices are the ones you get to see ebb and flow a lot more. Although with Nintendo stuff, it's very tricky because their first party stuff is historically like pretty. They do that thing where they're like they kind of like establish a price point for it.
Yeah, there's no such thing as like greatest hit.
Even
right?
if it's
like,
yeah,
not
even
really,
if it's,
yeah.
well, there
yeah,
is, but it
choice.
Takes like years before it'll make that list, and then if. Normally, if a game is not selling well, a publisher will dip and go, well, now it's $20 or now it's $30. You rarely, if ever, see that with Nintendo stuff. Even poor codename Steam, which no one, even mentioning it on this podcast, this may be the first actual mention of that game since it came out. Those guys worked really hard on it, did not get a significant price drop, at least for a while, before finally someone said, $15.
Which is
it's
crazy.
Whatever. Get out the door, please.
The difference in price for physical versus digital media, the change will come to gaming. There's no question about it. It happened with books, right? I can get a Kindle version of a book always cheaper than a paper book and always a paperback and always cheaper than a hardcover version, right? It happened to music. It's cheaper.
Movies.
It was cheaper to download than to buy the CD.
Remember Blockbuster Video?
Yeah.
I remember there was two on every street. Now there are none.
It'll happen, and you have to be patient until that happens and just kind of be smart. Now, you should, with a system like the Switch, though, you have to consider that if you only buy digitally, the cost will get you later on the actual
you'll run out of space.
Memory. You're going to run out of space, and you're going to have to buy
more.
You
need a new card, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting, like, it's a difficult position to be in because I think if you are buying things physically in this day and age, you know that you're paying that extra premium for a cart. You know what I mean? So like, I could definitely see why people would be upset about, hey, if I'm going to buy this game digitally on Switch and I'm going to put it on your platform as opposed to buying it on PlayStation or as opposed to buying it on Xbox or what have you, you know, why should I have to pay an extra $5, $10? But it's also not fair to somebody that maybe has limited internet access that they should have to pay an additional $10.
Yeah.
When the four of us could buy it.
Are you saying life is unfair?
Often.
I think it also means
one of my favorite catchphrases.
It means that if you were to develop an indie game, it would have to be that was digital only, it would have to be smaller than 30 gigs. Yep. It would just have to be. You could not make a 50 gig indie. I mean, no one makes a 50 gig.
Well, there's already a game that's bigger than the storage, right? In Japan?
Oh, yeah. Dragon Quest. Dragon Quest Heroes 1 and 2. Yeah.
So you have a retail option, right? But if like somebody didn't, you know, compartmentalize Snake Pass the way it should have been, and that was a 60 gig game, like that's using up a third of my memory card or whatever it is. So.
Or it comes on two cartridges, like Titanic on VHS. You get halfway through, you
remember
just
that?
The card out.
Remember that? Oh my God, remember that?
CAV later.
The sad fallout though, from all of this digital and physical conversation we've had though, part of me is sad by this, that's why I'm bringing this up. The slow, inevitable death of the boutique video game store, which there have been some amazing boutique stores. Like, I grew up in the Bronx, with not too far from Fordham Road, if you know where that is, or not even too far from sort of Third Avenue, and where you'd run into like just these mom and pop video game stores. And some of them tried really hard to sort of just show video games in a positive light, or gave really good attention to displays and to making the store feel like a place you wanted to go to.
Yeah.
I miss that. And that's gone. It's been gone from San Francisco from like 2 years I've been here.
Yeah. But,
and I feel like I rarely see them.
But we've got Amoeba for music, right? Like there are still stores selling vinyl. There will always be a subculture like that.
Yeah,
and it's going
to
get cool.
But it's harder to find.
Sure.
It's very hard to find.
There are very few video rental stores.
I miss that as an oldie.
I don't miss those.
You know?
Yes.
I miss the feel of walking into a video game store.
Well, if you go to Japan, it's like it's alive and well, right? Like the video retail.
Well, it's not doing that great.
All
though.
Sizes,
right? Yeah, still. But games not doing so great. Like you go to Tokyo Super Potato, it's half figures these days. It's not even.
Here's what has to happen,
anymore.
And this is what we're seeing happen now already. The game stores have to cease being game stores and have to be sort of catch-all nerd culture stores, right?
You mean like we did as a website? Because we kind of did that. We weren't just a video game.
Totally worked for us, right?
We were.
I mean, you can read that super early. You can watch a Spider-Man trailer on our site. And what, 15 years ago, you couldn't do that. You'd watch the Spider-Man for N64 trailer.
Not to derail you.
But for us, it wasn't a kind of, oh, we gotta change because maybe there'll be a drought in gaming. In the very beginning, we said, hey, man, our readers are into Star Wars.
Well, right.
We added that in 99. Well,
yeah, and I think it's crazy.
A lot of gaming sites now add entertainment because I think they want to fill the gaps when there's not a big game coming out.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, GameStop partnered with ThinkGeek specifically for this, right, to bring in collectibles, to bring in Funko Pops and nerdy like Minecraft phone cases and socks from Star Wars and all this weird stuff.
Zelda socks now.
Zelda socks, exactly. And GameStop they're down profits year over year. Their stocks are down year over year. They're closing up to 190 stores, but they are opening up to 35 boutique-y collectible themed stores, which are ThinkGeek brand.
Yeah, we'll bring them back to Puerto Rico.
That's right.
Sorry, they pulled out of Puerto Rico almost entirely at some point last year, and I had a bunch of folks tweeting at me going, this is really sad. Like, how am I supposed to buy my games now?
Yeah.
And I was like, man, that sucks.
Did they
like,
say it
that's
was local?
Unfortunate. Huh?
Did they say it was local?
Shut up. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
I think, some of those stores are going to pivot to other things. Like, ThinkGeek is a great example, right? It's an awesome brand for, like, t-shirts and collectibles, and they do really cool things around April Fool's. Always check them out then. So I think that's great. They're also going to do the trade-in stuff forever.
Yeah.
Like for classic games, for devices like iPhones, they'll have their trade stops.
But they've got to get more competitive with that because they're going up against other brick and mortar stores like Best Buy, which have that, or digital stores like Amazon, which lets you trade in games as well.
Best Buy's not doing so great either. Amazon's doing great because
Best Buy has been holding on to like the last.
Sears, the people who reintroduced the U.S. to gaming.
Sears.
I'm not doing so wonderful.
No, not at all. And but what we're seeing,
remember Alexander's?
What we're seeing globally is a slow retail apocalypse. Right, it's a slow decline. And when you lose those big stores, you lose the smaller stores that go with them.
Yep.
So like when your mom wants to go to the mall when you're a kid and she's like, I want to go to Macy's, I'll take you to GameStop afterwards. When Macy's goes away, there's no spillover to GameStop, right? There's no spillover to Toys R Us. So, but people are buying toys. They're buying nerdy t-shirts more than ever. They're buying games more than ever.
They're doing it over the internet.
On the plus side, though, we are seeing like this Barcade resurgence. There is more boutique-y stores. I was in an awesome store called Toy Tokyo in Manhattan 3 days ago.
I was super jealous that you said you were there.
Yeah, really cool store. I was in an awesome, and now Toy Tokyo, in the front of their store, it's like Funko Pops, right? It's like $10 chintzy brand new toys that
I like those things.
I don't either, right? They look like dead-eyed whatever.
Funko Pop fans.
It's fine. I get why people like them. But so they get people in with stuff like that, but then you walk to the back and it's like, oh, you guys have vintage Thundercats and you have old Star Wars On St. Mark's in Manhattan, there's a place called Barcade, right? A couple blocks from there, I found a retro game store. And I walked in and I just geeked out. I felt like I was in Tokyo because it was just like... So I think there's going to be a movement for this stuff.
I think so.
I think it's got to come together with the right sort of... It can't just be focused on games. It can't just be... In the same way, Amoeba is not just a record shop. They also have CDs. They also sell turntables.
Say Amoeba. It sounds so much like Amiibo. I'm like, no, he's talking about something else.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Amoeba,
If you want to see a store full of Amiibos, go to Target and look at the Animal Crossing.
There are some awesome vinyl stores around. And by the way, there's like now like a record day where like new vinyl comes out.
And there's a resurgence in that culture as well.
Springsteen does them all the time.
Absolutely.
Like there's this subculture that will always be around, but you're absolutely right. You're going to have to look a lot harder. And in some, like Puerto Rico, it might be impossible to find one, for example.
Puerto Rico's fallen on some hard times, let me tell you. But
And I'm sitting here with a big SD card just like sipping the iced tea like, well, that's not my business.
It's just listening to this, though, makes me feel like if I wasn't doing this, I think I'd open a Barcade somewhere.
Totally.
Just because I care so much about games and games culture. My only fear with opening one in the States is that it isn't like Japan where the video game themed bars are, it's just no one disturbs anything. Like, it amazes me how well and how careful the Japanese are and how... the word's not appreciative, respectful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They are of someone else's things. And so nothing feels like it's ever really
I know the
like
exact
trash.
Bar that you're talking about.
Mario
Bar.
I'm like,
Mario
Bar
of drunken hooligans and vandals.
Yeah, which is surprising for a bar because you order a drink and, get a little tipsy. But anyway, we should move on. Show's over. That was a lot of fun, as always. Thank you so much for joining us this week for Nintendo Voice Chat. And remember that you can leave us feedback at mvc@ign.com or on iTunes or anywhere you can leave a review for us. Please leave one and let us know what you think of the show. Thank you again for listening and for watching, because we wouldn't be hitting these milestones if it wasn't for you. And so I just want to say another time how grateful we are for all of your support. You can find us also on Twitter. You can find Zach Ryan at
ZachRyanSD.
You can find Brian Altano at
Agent Bizzle.
And you can find Per Schneider at
Per IGN.
Yep, and myself, Jose underscore Otero. Thank you so much for watching and listening, and we'll be back next week, hopefully with a Zelda spoiler cast. If you haven't finished, it's not a rush. That's not a label. Don't worry about it. But
it'll be around when you do.
Yeah, it'll be around when you do. We'll try something fun with segments, so at least you can get in on part of the action.
And go watch Link Together in the meantime.
Yeah, do that.
Very fun.
Yep, and we'll see you next week with more Nintendo Voice Chat.
I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.